Vedanta teacher James Schwartz on Bhagavad Gita. An audio workshop brought to you by meinyogalehrer.de, recorded in Yoga Vidya Westerwald Ashram in Germany on March 2013. Part 5 of 13.
Om Brahmanandam Paramasukadam Kevalam Yanamavartyam Dvandvatitam Gangadasadrisham Tattvamasya Dilaksham Ekam Nityam Vimalamachalam Sarvadi Sakshibhutam Pavatitam Trigunarahitam Satgurum Tamnamami Narayanam Padmavam Vashishtam Shaktim Chatat Putra Parasarancha Vyasam Sukham Gaurapadam Mahantam Govinda Yogendra Matasya Shisham Sri Shankaracharya Matasya Padmaha Padam Chastam Lakancha Shisham Tam Totikam Bhartika Karamanyan Asmad Gurum Shantatam Anatoshmihi Vishwam Darpana Drishyamanya Nagari Tulyam Nijantargatam Pashyanatmani Mayaya Vaigurivo Bhutam Yata Nidraya Yasakshat Gurute Prabodha Samaye Swatmanameva Dvayam Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Namaidam Shri Dakshinamurtaye Namaha Om. Yeah, you take them as prasad. Did I say that?
No.
Whatever comes. Oh, I forgot the most important part of karma yoga. Bad boy. Everything that happened, because what? Everything that happens to me, I take as a gift. That's called prasad. You do prasad here, don't you?
Yeah.
Huh? Prasad is consecrated food. You offer something to the deity. It's blessed by the deity. And then it's given back to you as a blessing. And then you eat it, you take the prasad. So that's a model for the karma yoga idea. My work is my worship, so I take my action and I offer it to Bhagawan. Bhagawan means what? This world. It's the field, it's the temple of my life. I offer that action to Bhagawan, and then Bhagawan gives me back an action, whatever it is, a result, and I say, thanks Bhagawan, thank you. And I eat I accept and digest the meaning or the result of that action. So in a relationship, this was your question, that's where you have all your problems, right? Because you're not, the people you're in relationships with are not giving you what you want. Right? Sometimes they do, and then you're happy. But when they don't give you what you want, then you're not happy, right? So then there's a conflict comes. Because in a relationship, you're expecting the other person to what? Act like Bhagawan and give you what you want. But the other person is Bhagawan, but Bhagawan, that Bhagawan in the relationship is controlled by his or her likes and dislikes, his or her vastness, and he or she can only give you what he or she has to give according to her vastness, or his or her vastness. So you've got to take it as what? As prasad. If they don't give you what you want, then you have to look at your wants. Well, maybe this is unreasonable to want this from this person. And maybe there's a good reason why Ishwara is not giving me what I want. Maybe I've got something to learn here. Thank you very much. That's a good teaching for me. So if you take whatever the person in your relationship gives you as prasad, no problem. You're solving the problem here inside your own mind. You're not asking that person to solve your problem. If I expect you to solve my problem, you're going to be under pressure, aren't you? Because what if you don't want to give me what I want? What if your vasanas tell you, no, I don't want to give you what you want? You've got to be true to your vasanas, don't you? You shouldn't give me something that's not right for you to give. You can only give what you can give, and you shouldn't give it just because I want it. Then I won't be true to then you won't be true to yourself. You have to be true to yourself. If somebody asks for something that's not right for you to give, you shouldn't give it. If you do give it, you'll feel uncomfortable. Because you're violating your swadharma, your nature, your vasanas. You're violating those. Whereas karma yoga solves the problem. I just take whatever you give me as prasad. If you give me what I want, you say, thank you, Lord. And if you don't give me what I want, I say, thank you, Lord. Understand? Because it says here, we don't care about the result. We care about what? Getting rid of our likes and our dislikes. The relationship is not about getting our likes and dislikes. It's about getting rid of our likes and dislikes.
That's the point.
Huh? Right? Isn't that the point? If your relationship with a person is not based upon like getting your likes and dislikes satisfied, you can enjoy that person. Huh? You can be friends with that person. You can have a nice relationship with that person. You can really have a good communication. And the love will come. You'll feel the love that's naturally there in the first place. But if your whole relationship is based upon that person satisfying your needs, you're asking, first of all, you're asking for disappointment, and you're going to ask for conflict with that person because nobody else can make you happy. Nobody can do it. That's the truth. Yes. Don't cry.
Don't cry because everybody was so quiet.
But 99% of the relationships are not that way.
No, they're not. But if you are in a relationship and you want it to work, do it as karma yoga and it will work. It will definitely work. But only if you do it as karma yoga. People say, you see, we're soulmates and we're going to moksha together. And that's why we're in a relationship. You don't go into a relationship for moksha. Huh? You're in a relationship to get your needs, your emotional needs met. That's why. In a relationship. See? And if you find yourself in a relationship and you desire moksha, then the way to make the relationship work is to take everything as prasad. Do it as karma yoga. Serve that person, see that person as Bhagawan. Offer what you have to that person as Bhagawan. And take what that person gives you as a gift from Bhagawan. So the person, you're converting the person into Bhagawan, which they are anyway. Huh? You convert the person into Bhagawan, and then your relationship's with Bhagawan, not with the person. And then the person, on the other side, they don't feel the pressure of your desire and your anger. Understand? They don't feel that pressure. That's a terrible thing for you to be responsible for another person's happiness. Terrible. Yes.
Can we talk about the process of consecration a bit more?
Sure.
Like, I've been doing that for a while, and I'm never sure about the response I get, or like how much it's coming from. Sometimes I feel like I'm running away from the response. I'm like, oh, I consecrated it now, and now I'm off. Like, I don't even want to hear the response because I'm scared of not getting a response or not being worthy of a response or something like that.
Well, when you consecrate, you take the karma yoga attitude. If you don't get a response, be happy with no response. Well, when you're consecrating an action, you're concerned about the result, mm-hmm. right? But you leave the result to Bhagavan. If you get no result, that's the result Bhagavan wants you to have.
No, I mean the response you are talking about. I'm consecrating, and then I get a response. I get
yes
a feeling, or I get some kind of feeling of a connection.
Yes.
If I don't feel that.
If you don't feel that, mm-hmm. well, maybe you're not consecrated. Maybe you're not actually giving away your desire or your fear at that time. Because if you let go, when you want something, you want that thing that you want, not for the thing itself. You don't want a relationship for the relationship. Let's use that as an example. That's not what you want. It's never what you really want. The object is never what you really want. What you want is freedom from loneliness. Isn't it? That's your real desire, isn't it? If you could get freedom from loneliness without a relationship, you wouldn't waste the time in a relationship, would you? You wouldn't put up with that other person and all of their stuff. Huh? So what you really want is to be free of that feeling of separation, a feeling of loneliness. That's your basic motivation. Understand that? Huh? Think about it. How to explain this? And the way you, and this karma yoga is getting rid of the desire and the fear without having to get the result to get rid of the desire or the fear. In other words, you offer the desire or the fear to Bhagavan, and you leave the result up to Bhagavan. So you're free of it then. So with karma yoga, you're beating the system. You're not having to work out the relationship to get the result. You get the result immediately by consecrating, by letting go. Otherwise, you have to keep your desires and fears in place until the object comes and removes the desire or fear for you. So yogis are, samsaris are people, they have to have things in the world to keep peaceful. But yogis are people who understand what karma yogis, and any yogi is a person who understands that if I can release the fear and the desire now, I'll get peace immediately.
But how much is it my own belief that I really consecrated it now? And how much is really, you know, the whole process of it? Do I have to, because I could just say, I consecrate now, from now, my whole life to Ishvara.
That's the best.
Yeah.
Better just give your whole life to Ishvara and let Ishvara do your life. And then you don't have to worry about your desires and fears. That's right. That's the best.
But how do I need some kind of a response of when I'm doing things Well, in the right.
Well, but what do you feel when you if you give your life to Ishwar? What do you feel? Free. Huh? You feel free.
Inshallah.
Huh? Inshallah, yeah, my God. You feel great. Why? Because I don't have to worry about the results anymore. I need that Ishwar worry about it. That's Ishwar's job. Understand? Huh? Okay?
Yeah.
Huh? If you don't feel free, then you haven't let it go. Because you're just saying, okay, I, it's not up to me, it's up to you. Not my will, but thine, O Lord, it says in the Bible. Did you have a question, ma'am?
Oh, it's everything clear now.
Everything clear, yeah.
Almost.
Almost. No, that's right. Huh? Yes, huh?
I have a bit of a confusion or it's true.
Yeah.
Because there's a Jason who said three gunas are placed in Vaishvara's will.
Yeah.
And according to Ramana, the only choice we have is either to go towards awareness or be involved. Everything
that's happening in the field of awareness. Yeah.
Do we actually have any free will? Is not everything completely predestined?
Yes, from Ishwara's point of view, yes it is. Ramana is speaking from Ishwara's point of view. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
But Jiva doesn't have Ishwara's point of view.
But isn't it all just to make an illusion?
Well, and what point of view are you speaking from? From the Jiva's point of view or from aware?
The Jiva's point of view, the Jiva's point of view is the belief that we have a choice.
That's right. And as long as you believe you're a Jiva, then you do have a choice. Because the Jiva is just a belief too. So then the Jiva's got, otherwise the Jiva is going to keep suffering, isn't it? If the Jiva just, that's why Krishna says here, he says, do not be attached to inaction. Because if you take that point of view, that there's nothing I can do, it's all Ishwara. If the Jiva takes that point of view, then the Jiva is just going to keep suffering.
And isn't it one and the same? I mean, if you say you have no choice, it means you're giving everything to Ishwara, and you're just seeing what unrolls in your life. And the only choice you have is to constantly try and take towards awareness.
But that's what karma yoga is. It's constantly keeping your mind on awareness. That's what Ramana says too.
Mm-hmm.
Huh? That's what Ramana is teaching too.
Mm-hmm.
He calls it Ishwara Pranidhana. He calls it right, worship of Ishwara, worship of Bhagavan. He said that's equal to self-inquiry. It is self-inquiry. It's the same as Vedanta or knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Because then that worship means what? Surrendering all your thoughts and feelings and actions to Ishwara means understanding that all of it's coming from Ishwara and not from me. That as Krishna says here, and speaking as Ishwara, that you're not, the Jiva is not the author of your actions. That that Ishwara is the gunas, or Ishwara, is the author of the actions. In other words, Ishwara is causing all this stuff to happen. Now when the Jiva understands that, then the Jiva is free of what? Of choice. That's what we don't want. We don't want to have to keep choosing over and over and over again. That tires us out and wears us out in every situation. If like Anika, is it Anika?
Mm-hmm.
Like Anika says, I just turn my whole life over to Ishwara, then I don't have to make all the decisions. I just realize Ishwara is making all the decisions and I just keep my mind on myself all the time and enjoy my own nature. So this free will and determination is a very tricky thing. It's true and it's not true. You do have free will, but you don't have free will. It's all determined, but it's not all determined. It just depends upon what point of view you're looking at it from. And if you think you're a jiva, we have to take you seriously as a jiva. You don't know you're pretending to be a jiva. Right? You think you're a real jiva. But you're not a real jiva, you're a pretend jiva. You're actually an awareness. And the maya makes awareness think that it's a jiva. So we've got, and that maya appears as a belief in awareness that I'm a doer. I'm an enjoyer. Aham karta, aham bhokta. I'm the one that does actions to enjoy the results. That's how it appears. And so as long as you believe that you're doing and that you're experiencing and enjoying results, then we've got to talk to you reasonably. So then we have to tell you, exercise your free will. If you understand Ishwar, then it's not a question. And it doesn't matter. You can have free will or not free will, it doesn't matter. Both are just objects in awareness known to me as awareness, and they don't mean anything at all. Did that clear it up? Good. You seem to have a pretty good understanding of all this, huh? Have you been studying for a while, is self-inquiry? Yeah, I could see. Good for you. Good thinking. Yeah. Great. Okay. Self-realized person. A discriminating person is unattached to the out. This is in verse 55 through 58. A discriminating person is unattached to the outcome of all situations and does not rejoice when circumstances are pleasant. When things are good, you don't get high. Nor is he or she uncomfortable in unpleasant circumstances, and you don't get depressed when things go wrong. Because what? Your awareness. Nor is he or she, let's see, and if a, now this is a beautiful verse, okay? I love this verse. And if a person is able to withdraw his or her sense organs from the sense object, like a turtle withdraws its limbs, his or her knowledge is steady. Now that means what? That means you are connected, your senses are connected to sense objects. Nothing wrong with it. You get to enjoy yourself in the form of experiences, sensations, and so forth and so on. But what? A realized person doesn't allow the vasana to take over and keep your senses hooked to the objects. You can remove your senses from the objects at will, like a turtle draws its legs into his shell. So when I'm eating, and I reach a point where I'm full, that and a realized person will, what will he do? He'll take his tongue away from his food and put his fork down and go away from the table. He or she won't allow that vasana to keep eating for him or her. Sex, another one. There's a good one. It's walk and you walk away from sex. If you can, you can. That doesn't mean that realized people don't have sex. It means they don't get obsessed with it and attached to it and think about it all the time. They can take their sense organs away.
So it doesn't mean to not hear or hear what's inside or something, yeah. What I've been told, it's just about remaining the flat screen.
That's right.
That's not so hard.
No, it's not hard.
I always thought it's about the total thing, about turning the senses inside and just hear inside.
Yeah. No, it's about remaining the flat screen.
Easy thing.
Easy thing, yeah. No, knowledge is very easy. Huh?
One soup.
Yeah.
Flat screen.
Right. Absolutely. That's very good. For one who does not feed the... if, now listen to this. This is really cool. When you're going for a sense object, that means any experience, okay? Music or anything like that. Anything that you like. When you're going for that, what are you going for? The bliss. You're going for bliss. You want to feel good. You want to feel happy. So it says here, for the one who doesn't feed the senses come back to the self, leaving the longing behind. In other words, they automatically go to the bliss of awareness. They're the causal body. This is called the causal body, the Anandamaya Kosha. The senses automatically go here and drink the bliss automatically without needing the object to get the bliss. And these people know that, so they don't chase objects, and they get all of the bliss or all the enjoyment, all the satisfaction, without doing anything at all. Because the senses automatically turn around and look for the happiness in the self when you know that the happiness isn't coming from the object. But I don't, oh no, I can't trust it. I don't know. Well, is it really that way? I think I better make sure I get connected to these senses. These sense objects. Yeah, Andreas.
But I have to be able to discriminate between experiential bliss and the bliss of knowledge.
Yes, that's right. But that's not Arjuna's problem.
Okay.
Arjuna isn't up to that level yet. Between the bliss of pure knowledge, the bliss of awareness, and the bliss of experience. He's just trying to get him to understand the mechanism of the mind. See, because if you're renouncing actions, then you're worried. Well, am I going to get any kind of happiness here? No. If I'm not doing actions, then I'm not going to get any bliss, am I? Because at least by doing some actions, I get to feel good. But now I'm just giving up my actions to Ishwara, renouncing the actions and their results, will I get bliss? Yes. The answer is yes. What happened? The senses will just turn around and go look up here to the causal body, and you'll experience the bliss of awareness. This is where you experience the bliss of awareness. This is bliss, non-experiential bliss, okay? Awareness is non-experiential bliss, and this is experiential bliss. As we move on, you'll see the difference. We'll explain the difference to you. So these enlightened people, they know that, and so they feel good. And this Brahmanandam, I said. The next word, Paramasukadam. Paramasukha means, sukha means bliss or pleasure. And parama means limitless pleasure. The limitless pleasure that you experience is what? The experience of awareness in the causal body. When you get what you want, your mind, the desire or the fear disappears, and your attention goes from the object to the Ananda Maya Kosha, the sheath of bliss. And you experience the bliss of your nature in the causal body. And that will happen automatically if you, what? withdraw your senses from the objects. In other words, if you don't chase sense objects. See, when I feel incomplete, when I feel lonely and separate and frustrated and incomplete and so forth, when I feel like that, then I get desperate. And I look for things. Huh? If I get lonely, I search for people to talk to. You know needy, lonely people? Huh? How they are? They're just running around all the time looking, trying to connect and to glom onto you and suck some energy out of you, huh? Because they're feeling lonely. They're looking for objects. When you get hungry, rather than just releasing the hunger and letting your mind go in and find the satisfaction there, you run to the kitchen and eat something so you get a little bit of bliss. And so forth and so on, whatever it is. But these people, it's not like that. These people who know who they are, it's not like that. They're free of that craving, that attachment to the senses and the sense objects. When the self is known to be oneself, even the longing goes away. That means your vasanas go away when you understand that you're the self. The vasanas cause the longing. Vasanas, when you want things, and I want a relationship. I'm sorry, I have to use this, but this is the one this is our big problem, isn't it? Huh? We all want love, right? Doesn't everybody want love? Sure they do. That's why there's, the dating sites and Match.com and everybody's checking everybody out all the time. Huh? Because you want love. And what does it say here? So you long for love. Keep thinking, I wish I had love. You pray to Bhagwan. Bhagwan, please send me a soulmate. I want somebody to love. Well, that vasana for love, it goes away when you what? You understand that you're whole and you're complete. What does that mean? That I am love. Isn't it funny that people look for love from people who are looking for love? If a person's looking for love, it means they don't know what love is. They don't have love. Because love is you. Love is your nature. So you're going and looking for somebody that's going to give you love. And they're looking for somebody who's going to give you love. It's never going to work. Even for a person who practices yoga and whose goal is clear, how about this? Even for a person who practices yoga and whose goal is clear, the senses can pull the mind away from the self. Happens every day. Keep your senses under control and contemplate on me with a discriminating mind. Self-knowledge becomes established in a discriminating, controlled mind. Now, here's a great verse. Here's this explaining the whole psychology of ignorance. Ignorance means not knowing I'm awareness. So when you don't know your awareness, this is what happens. Okay? It's going to explain. This is a real powerful, very important verse. Just tells you how it works. When you dwell on objects, dwell means think about objects. When you think about objects, attachment arises. Attachment causes desire. And when desire is obstructed, anger arises. Now, why is desire obstructed? What, huh? Why doesn't desire just bring the object to me? You remember The Secret? Huh? How many of you read The Secret? Oh, thank God there weren't too many. The secret was, oh, here's the secret, baby. You just put it in your consciousness and make it attractive, and you attract it to you. It's a law of attraction. And you're meant to be able to, with your desire, produce the things that you want, to manifest the things that you want just by wanting them. What's wrong with that picture? If you're a hungry, lonely ego, nothing's wrong with it. You got me. You're just like a fish. Oh, that's a great one. I'm on the hook. And you buy the book and you do all this sort of thing, trying to like imagine that you can beat Ishwara at his own game. But you cannot beat Ishwara by wanting things. Why? Because the wanting is always be obstructed one way or the other, sooner or later. Why? Because reality is a duality, and there are all sorts of other objects in the field. And the things that you want are what? Are limited, and all the desires for those things are unlimited, so a result that I want may go somewhere else anytime, and I may not get what I want. Which means, when I don't get what I want, what happens? The first thing that happens, I get angry. Our emotional problems are not because our mother and our father and the society and the government and religion and all those and the corporations and all those bad things out there are trying to make life miserable for us. That's not why we're upset. There's nobody else is to blame. I want something, and Ishwara is just not giving it to me. My desire is broken, it's obstructed, and when desire can't flow to the object, it backs up and becomes anger. That's the first stage. Think about it. Then what happens next? An angry mind is easily deluded. It's called kama, krodha, lobha, moha, mada, matsarya. Okay. Kama means desire, krodha means anger, and then moha means delusion. I get deluded. That rajas, that anger, turns to tamas. Tamas is a cloud of energy. I just can't maintain that anger very long, and it collapses, and I get exhausted and tired, and then I get deluded. I can't see what's going on. I'm confused. When you're in a cloud of darkness and ignorance, you're confused. You can't decide what to do. That's called delusion. And then what happens next? And delusion leads to loss of memory. Here, memory means knowledge. You can't remember that you're who you are. Never mind who you are as awareness. You can't even remember who you are as a jiva. You get all confused. What am I doing here? Who am I? You're saying about your jiva, you're saying. Because you're completely disconnected from yourself when you're caught in this stream of karma, this stream of emotion and karma that's flowing out of this, ignorance of your own nature. When memory goes, the mind is incapacitated. That means you can no longer discriminate. And when the mind no longer functions properly, one's life is destroyed. It doesn't mean you die physically. It means what? Your whole life goes to hell, goes to pot. I call it the dark night of the soul. You just get confused and depressed, and you have nowhere to go, and you feel rotten. And where does it all start? Where does it all start? I want. I want. give me, give me, give me, I want, I don't want, that's where it all starts. And self-inquiry is looking at the I. You say, I want. Does the want belong to the I? Huh? No. Why? Why doesn't the want belong to the I? Because the I is whole and complete. The I is full, isn't it? The I is full, so it can't want, can it? How can it want? What will it want? It won't want anything if it's full. But it says, I want. Well then, why is the I that is full saying, I want? Because Maya or ignorance is making it think that it's incomplete. Understand this clearly. This is the fundamental psychology of every human being. If you get this clear, it'll set you free, I tell you. Because we need to disassociate the I from the want, because the want belongs with the ignorance. The want doesn't go to the I. But owing to what's called mutual superimposition, in Vedanta, we have technical terms, I just throw those out to impress you and intimidate you with the knowledge. But it means what? It just means I confuse the I take it to be a wanting being. I isn't a wanting being. But I becomes a wanting being when what? When ignorance is operating. And now I has a problem. That's why we have to look at desire. And an enlightened person understands this, how ignorance works. This is just it's a fabulous verse. It's an amazing verse, isn't it? I mean, when you think about it. It just unmasks our whole psychology, A, B, C, D, E, F, right on down the line. All starting from what? Ignorance of myself. Verse 64. Even when you move in the world of objects, it's possible to attain tranquility, peace of mind, if the sense organs are controlled and you stand apart from your likes and your dislikes. Self-knowledge, easily established in a pure or tranquil mind, destroys existential sorrow. But for the agitated mind, there is no self-knowledge. If your mind is agitated, then what happens? If your mind is disturbed by this desire and this delusion and this all and the fear and all that stuff, right? Contemplation does not take place. Contemplation means thinking I'm awareness all the time, keeping my mind all the time thinking about who I am. Contemplation does not take place, and without contemplation on the self, there is no peace. Without peace, how can there be happiness? Self-knowledge will not stick in a mind distracted by changing sensations. They carry it away just as a strong wind carries a small boat across the water. You ever been out on a lake rowing in a boat? Maybe not. But I came from Montana. I was a fisherman and I had a small boat, a raft. And sometimes I'd go quite a ways out in the lake and then I'd want to come back to my vehicle, to my tent. And a wind would come up, And no matter how hard I would row, the wind would just push me away from where I was going. And I'd have to just row like crazy just to stay where I was. After a while, I'd just give up and just let, hey, never mind. Where I'm going to end up, I don't know. And that's exactly what happens here. Huh? If you allow your emotions and your feelings to what? Push you around, they will just take you far away from yourself. And these people, these self-realized people, don't let that happen. They keep their mind, they keep their attention on the self all the time. They may have strong emotions or strong feelings, that's all right. But they don't allow the winds of those feelings and those desires to like push them away, push them around, and take them somewhere. They just sit still and hang in there and wait till the winds of desire subside. Therefore, Arjuna, the self-knowledge of one whose senses are free of their respective objects is steady. This is why we need yoga along with Vedanta. Because yoga is going to get the mind ready for what? This knowledge. We're not against yoga. We're all for yoga. In fact, you can argue that you need yoga. If you don't have yoga, if you don't have a steady mind, the Vedanta is useless. And you find this, I had a disciple some time ago who was very good, got the knowledge very good, well, but the mind wasn't steady. Eventually the mind just, you know, took away the knowledge. It didn't, you know, the knowledge was there. So she hadn't done her yoga properly. Her mind wasn't really purified. It was temporarily sattvic, and for a period of time, then she got the knowledge, but what? That hadn't worked out all that stuff, and then these big vasanas started to explode, and it took away the knowledge. Can happen. Because the knowledge wasn't firm. The vasana, the wind of desire and fear, was stronger than the knowledge, and it blew it out of her mind. And she came crashing down. So I got to do yoga. In that, I love this verse, in that dark daylight world in which all beings sleep, the wise person who has mastered the senses is awake. Just as water flows into an ocean, leaving the ocean unchanged, objects arising in the mind of a self-realized person leave it unchanged. Isn't that beautiful? Huh? It means that the feelings and emotions and thoughts come into the mind of those people, but what? They don't disturb the mind. It appears, and then the ripples or the waves just disintegrate, and the mind stays calm. We're not saying you have to get rid of your feelings or your emotions or anything like that. But because I know I'm awareness and I'm identified with the screen of awareness, those things that appear, what, just subside and disappear without leaving me, the screen, awareness, unchanged. It says, but, just as bad news for the ego, but, the desire of objects is never peaceful. The one who abandons the belief in I and mine and moves through life without longing is peaceful. Why do you give up I and mine? Because it's all Ishwaras. You don't, huh? You don't own one thing. You haven't created one thing. Not one thing belongs to you. Not your body, not your mind, not anything. Every single thing belongs to Ishwara. It's all been given. You can't say it's mine or non-mine. It all belongs to Ishwara.
And I'm awareness, it doesn't
That's right. And if I'm awareness, it's all mine.
Yeah.
If it's all mine, there's no I am mine. It's all mine. It's all me. Because, listen, where do you experience objects? Where do you experience things?
Awareness.
Awareness.
Flat screen.
On the flat screen. You don't experience objects outside, do you? You experience objects here, in your mind. An object is just the knowledge of the object. Huh? And where that knowledge appears, in awareness, in the subtle body. And where does the subtle body appear? On the screen. What is your mind made out of except awareness? What are your thoughts made out of except awareness? What is your knowledge made out of except awareness? You don't experience anything out there. This gentleman's right. You only experience everything in awareness, and everything is made of awareness, which means it's all you. The good ones and the bad ones, it's all me. Problem solved. If this is gone, then this person moves through life without longing and is peaceful. This is steadiness in the self. Just this knowledge keeps you steady. The self-realized are not deluded by appearances. A mind that is fixed on the self at the time of death is free. And the time of death here just means when a thought or an experience disappears. You know, if you have a thought appearing, you don't appear. If you have a thought or a feeling, an experience disappearing, you don't disappear, do you? When you know your awareness, you're free of the birth of thoughts and the death of the thoughts. The birth of experiences and the death of experiences are what? Don't affect you. See, the jiva is experience hungry. The jiva is just awareness, but what? Under the spell of ignorance. When it's ignorance, it feels incomplete, so it gets experience hungry. It wants experiences. Huh? It's a hungry mouth. It's a consumer. Jiva. And so it goes for objects which are just appearances. But a wise person isn't fooled by the appearance, by the object. There's this beautiful, sexy person in front of you, and you think, oh, I'm going to have that. Huh? And all it is what? A thought in your mind. It's just made out of you, and it doesn't have any substance at all. It's just an idea or a thought. It's only a form appearing in you. And it has, you're free of that always, if you know who you are. It doesn't mean you don't enjoy objects. It doesn't mean you don't have experiences. It doesn't mean anything of the sort. It just means you know the difference between what appears in you and yourself. And you don't confuse them. You know, that's an object, that's an experience, and I'm the knower. And then the mind, once that knowledge is firm, the mind stays steady. And you feel confident to deal with anything that happens. You feel totally confident to handle anything. Bring it on, Bhagavan. Bring it on, Ishwara. I can take it. You stand above Ishwara at that time. Ishwara is what? Has no power over you. We'll talk about that later, what the relationship between you and Ishwara and you and Jiva is.
Thank you for listening. For more information about Vedanta, yoga and self-inquiry, visit shiningworld.com, yogavidya.de or meinyogalehrer.de.